Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Robert Swartwood Podcast. Starting off the year of new podcasts with the one and only Brett Battles, who is the author of, God, what is it now, 20 novels, Brett?
I think 21. Don't quote me on that. I'm not 100% sure.
He has the Jonathan Quinn series, the Project Eden series. He has a collaboration with Robert Gregory Brown with the Poe with the Alexandria Post thrillers. Well, you also have the Logan Harper series. Right. And you have a YA book which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Sure.
Where do you find the time?
Well, I find it every day. That's what I do. It's my full-time job. So I better be sitting down typing every day, or I am not a good employee for House Brett.
So how many hours a day would you say that you spend writing?
If I'm writing new material, I kind of break it up into a couple of different ways. There's the writing new material, or then there's my edit phase when I'm, you know, obviously doing my rewrites and getting it ready to go out and everything. When I'm writing new material, I'm usually actually writing for about, I would say 6 to 7 hours a day. And then if I'm editing or rewriting though, I may go as much as 10, 12 hours in a day, because the writing the new material, there comes a point when I just can't write anymore. And that's usually around that mark, where if I write more, I'm going to be, I take that back. I can write more, but what'll happen is the next day I won't be able to write as much. And so, if I cut it off at a certain amount of time, or actually I have a certain word count I shoot for, if I cut it off at that, I'm good to go usually the next day for the most part. And I don't have this fatigue factor setting in, and I can keep a pace up. But when I'm doing rewriting and stuff, for some reason I can keep going. I mean, it's exhausting, but since the material is already there and a lot of it is me reading through it and tweaking it and everything, I can just keep going, okay, a little bit more, a little bit more. I'll go up for another hour. I can keep doing this, and I just end up going in from like sun up to sun down, you know, sometimes or more. So that's kind of where I'm at on that.
Now, do you actually do outlining, or do you kind of just go from just page one, or do you think a lot about it in your head before you actually sit down? I mean, for me personally,
well,
you know,
yeah,
I typically, you know, I'll think of a book before I actually sit down and write. I outline it more or less in my head. You know, I kind of know the characters. I know what the story is. I know where I'm going to be going. But I never actually put anything down on paper for some reason. I don't know why. That's just me. And I didn't know, like, with you, because, I mean, you have such – you're very, very prolific. And obviously, you're, you know, like you say, you write so much each day.
Right.
And also with so many different series, you know, I'm sure that might get confusing after a while.
It can, but I'm not working on multiple books at the same time. I'm always working – I have one main focus when I'm working on a book. I may take a day or two out, because what often happens is, you know, I finish a book, send it off to my copy editor, and then I start writing the next book. So I'm in a different book, you know, and then a couple weeks later when my manuscript comes back from my copy editor, I have to go back to that book and kind of just go over the notes and everything. So I'll take a day or two to do that. But for the most part, I'm just sticking to one book, one set of characters at a time. So that, you know, that in that way, it's not so bad. As far as outlining is the most tedious, horrible, disgusting task that I could possibly think of. I had to do outlining to a certain extent when I was being published by Random House, because, you know, they would want a synopsis. And usually I tried to keep it as short as possible, because I just can't stand the dang things. And then, you know, I'd go from there. But no, what I am, in many ways, like you, you know, if it's one of my series, one of my long-running series, you know, the characters are already living in my head. I just got to unlock them in whatever room I left them in the last time I finished the last story they were involved in. And then what happens is usually as I'm getting, I kind of know, you know, I sit down with my calendar like months in advance, and I kind of just pencil in what book I want to write when, because I have a fairly steady pace of how long it takes me to get a books done and everything like this. This sounds all very clinical and scientific. There's a lot of movement in there. Some books take longer than I think they're going to, whatever. But, you know, it just keeps me on track. And so when I'm getting close to finishing one book, I may start a little bit thinking about the next one or just some ideas about it and everything. And in fact, actually, I may have ideas just come to me about it much earlier. And I just kind of file those away. And then, but as I'm getting closer, they're starting to coalesce because the part of my mind is knowing that I'm going to need to move on to the next one. So then usually when I finally sit down to start a new book, A, obviously I know who my characters are. B, I have a pretty good idea sometimes of where the book is going to end. I often have a good idea of the very beginning of the book. And then I know something about what the story is about, I guess is probably the best way to describe it. These things will change as I'm writing because I'm not confined to my outline, and I will explore areas that will perhaps take me in a direction that was unexpected. But, you know, and then I go fix it all in the rewrite, make sure everything is nice and tight and everything. But I am much more comfortable going in a more of a freestyle seat of your pants kind of a way with a little bit of forethought and everything going into it. Right. Now, there's a couple things that doesn't apply to, you know, I do the co-authored books with Rob. The Alexander Poe series. Since we're both working on those, we have to do an outline ahead of time. And so that becomes a necessity in there so that we're both on board on what the outline. So that makes sense and everything. Now, the other interesting thing that I do sometimes, all of my books, pretty much all of them, are also done as audiobooks through audible.com. And often, if I haven't been working on a story, for instance, we'll take my Project Eden series. It's a very integrated story where one book leads into the next, leads into the next, leads into the next. And until recently when I wrote them, I would write one, and then I'd move on and maybe write a Quinn book or a Logan Harper book or whatever, and then I'd come back to the Project Eden book. And since they're so integrated, I couldn't, you know, I needed to recall everything that was going on. So prior to actually sitting down to writing the next book, I would listen to the audiobook of the book before it.
Oh, nice.
And which was great because it got me into the headspace of the book and everything.
Right.
This last Eden book that just came out in, 2 days ago, as we're recording this, was the exception to the rule in the sense that I wrote it back to back with the last Project Eden book, which was Eden Rising. And so I just went straight from Eden Rising into Dream Sky. And I didn't need to remind myself of what was going on. I was still in the same headspace. So in that case, it was the exception.
Now, how many more books do you think you see Eden going before? I mean, because you definitely have an end in mind.
I have an end in mind. And, you know, if you had asked me that when I first started the series out, I would have said, oh, there's probably going to be maybe three, maybe four books total. And, of course, you know, number six just came out. I honestly think that we are, I know I'm getting close now to the end, which is both good news and but my fans are of the series you know, see that as good news, but they also, a lot of them see it as bad news because they've been enjoying it, which makes me feel great and everything. And that's wonderful that they've been enjoying it, but it has to have an end. And I'm thinking that, it's probably going to be, it might just be one more book, probably more likely two more books before I finish that. So it's the end is in sight. I would say by this time next year, the last book will have been written or very close to it. So one way or the other.
Now, what about the Quinn books? Obviously, it's your most successful series so far. Is it one of those things where you want to, do you have, I don't want to say it.
Does it have to have an end?
Well, I mean, you know, you have successful series that just keep going on and on and on. Right. And then you have series like F. Paul Wilson. He ended up basically ending the Repairman Jack series because he kind of felt, you know, he did as much as he could. He didn't want to kind of make the series go stale, if that makes sense.
Right. No, it totally makes sense. I think if I felt the series was going stale, I would end it, or I would take a break from it or something. I have tried to do things to keep it from doing that. You know, I'm very conscious of trying not to repeat things that I've done in other books, you know, or storylines, whatever, or circumstances and stuff, because that can become very easy to do. Within the Quinn books, you know, they are all, in essence, they're standalones. You know, readers can pick any one of them up and read them. But there's also an overarching story, like there are in many of these series these days, of the regular characters, about what's happening to them, how their relationships are evolving, things that are happening to them personally and everything. And that's what's made the Quinn books really interesting for me, is because their circumstances continue to evolve. The role that Quinn plays in the books is different than it was at the beginning. In the first book, in The Cleaner, Nate was his apprentice, and he was his apprentice through several of the books. But now Nate is like a partner, because he's gone through the apprenticeship. He can handle jobs on his own, and he's become Quinn's partner. And Quinn is taking a slightly, you know, at times when, you know, he doesn't always have to be forefront on things. But, you know, so that makes it gives me a lot more interesting dynamics to play with. And I've added another regular character a couple of books ago that's, you know, become involved in things. I've killed off some characters, you know, that I didn't expect I would be killing off years ago. But it worked organically with the way the story was going. And so that's what keeps it interesting to me. As long as that happens, that series will continue to go. So hopefully, we'll see how long.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, once the series gets old for a writer, it's definitely going to get old for the readers.
Absolutely.
Actually, now let's talk about The Cleaner, because it's a very your path to publication is a very interesting one. It isn't, The Cleaner came out from a Random House imprint. It won, was it the Anthony Award?
It was nominated for the Barry Award for Best Thriller. It did not, The Cleaner did not win. The second book, The Deceived, actually won the Barry for Best Thriller. So, but they were both nominated for it. In fact, I think I had another book nominated for that too.
You get nominated so much that you're just like,
no, it's been a while. There was a run right there where like several of the Quinn books were noted and everything, which was very nice and very gratifying to me. But yeah, sorry.
Well, so The Cleaner then, it came out then from a Random House imprint, but originally, if I understand this correctly, it was actually picked up first by a small press publisher.
Well, it's even...
Or accepted, I mean.
Yeah, right. It's you know, like all aspiring published novelists, I did my sending out of query letters, trying to get agents, trying to get some publishers or whatever to look at it. The Cleaner was actually the third novel I had ever written. And the other two just kind of went into a desk, and where they still sit and probably always will and always should. But I really liked The Cleaner. I thought it was, you know, a really good novel, you know, and a great idea and everything. But I would get some requests for like partials. I think I might have had one or two who just said, hey, they'll look at the whole thing. But in the end, nobody was taking it. And I was ready to kind of put it on the shelf and move on. And I ran into a friend of mine who used to be in the same writers group I was in. And he had become published. He'd actually gotten published by Bantam Dell, which is where I eventually ended up, for a little while. And then he ended up at a small press that was working out of L.A. at the time called Ugly Town. And they were very prestigious press. They're the ones who came out with Victor Geisler's Gun Monkeys when it first came out, which is a big hit for them and for him, and a couple of other things. And he said, you know what? I'll talk to the guys. I want you to go ahead and just send them your manuscript, and I'll let them know it's coming. And I go, are you sure? And he goes, absolutely. Just go ahead and send it. And I go, all right, I'll do that. So I sent them the manuscript, and this was like in February of whatever particular year that was. It was 2004 or something like that. And then what I did is what I always told myself that I needed to do is I moved on. I started writing my next books or started looking at what my next one was going to be. And eventually that year I started writing, and I didn't hear back from anybody. For the first time I actually heard back from Uglytown was November that year. So over six months later. I received an email, and it was the way it's worded. I kind of got the feeling it was a group email, meaning to a few different authors. It says we've received your manuscript, and we will be getting back to you within a month. And I'm thinking, wow. And he said, sorry, and basically sorry for the delay. We've had a lot going on, but you know, we will get back to you. I thought, well, you know, that's really nice. That's great. I totally had forgotten about this, and I'm already halfway through, or more than halfway through, the next book that I'm writing. So I continue writing, go through Christmas, a month passes actually, I don't hear anything. And then I'm in January of that year, and, all of a sudden I'm actually at a Starbucks that I tended to go to after work, working on actually doing edits because I had finished writing this next book, and I'm doing the edits on it, trying to get it into shape so that I can start sending this book out. And I get a phone call, and it's Jim from Uglytown, and he starts talking to me about my book. And I'm like, wow, this is really exciting, you know? And finally, I'm sitting here listening to what he has to say, because I thought maybe he was just calling because he had some questions and he wasn't quite sure. He just wanted to ask me, and I thought, well, this is a great step and everything. And finally, I stopped him and I go, wait, are you saying you're going to buy my book? And he said, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. And I swear to God, and I tell this story the same way every time because it is true, I do not remember anything from that conversation from that point forward. So, I mean, that was it. That was me finally breaking through the wall and to get published. And remember, this is 2005, I think, or 4 or 5, something like that. So it's, you know, before self-publishing was even an option or anything else. So the only way to get a book out was to have a publisher. The problem was that about 6 months later, Uglytown ended up having to suspend operations because their former distributor had gone bankrupt, owing them a lot of money, and they had found out that they just weren't going to get that money back or any of it back, and small presses are working on such a small margin, a tight line as it is. Both Tom and Jim, who ran the company, had full time jobs in addition to running this publishing house, so it was like, oh, so close, right? And I'm thinking, oh, this is, you know, of course, oh well, all right, I just got to keep moving on. But then they did a really cool thing. They had a contact at Bantam Dell who often bought paperback reprint rights of some of their novels, because Uglytown would bring them out either as hardcover or as trade paperback. And back then, the mass market paperbacks were, you know, really still really popular, and people were buying a lot of them. And so they would buy the mass rights from them on several of stuff. And they said, we're going to send, we told Shannon about your book, and we're going to send it to her. She'd wanted to read it. You don't mind, do you? And I was like, no, of course I don't mind. Go ahead. And so they sent it to her. Long story short, I ended up having a conversation with her that lasted an hour. And in the end, Bantam Dell ended up buying my contract from Uglytown and taking me on, and then giving me ripping up that contract and giving me a 3-book contract for the first 3 Quinn books. So that's kind of how I got there, and all of that was without an agent. I got my agent like about 3 months late after that. So it was a weird and kind of convoluted ride to get there, but I did, so that there's that, I guess.
Very nice. And then, so now, you know, you published several books with Bantam Dell, and eventually the whole self-publishing thing, well, I don't want to say self-publishing thing,
right?
But basically ebooks kind of really, the rise of ebooks came about, you pretty much jumped in.
Well, to be fair, I had to do something. And then here's what, the rise of ebooks coincided with, And probably is partly to blame for all the chaos that started happening in publishing in New York. Although I don't think it's completely that. I think they were working on off of a structure that is antiquated for where things need to be today. And there was a lot of merging and shifting and everything. First thing that happened to me when I was at Bantam Dell, when things started going in the wrong direction, was that my editor, who I loved, got a job at Penguin and left, and leaving me with a new editor who we didn't necessarily in the end see things eye to eye. I'll just leave it at that. But everything was still okay because the head of Bantam Dell, the publisher of Bantam Dell, which is, you know, the same thing as whatever, the boss of Bantam Dell, she was also a big proponent of mine. So she was going to keep an eye on my stuff and promise to push, you know, be the force behind me. So I still felt okay, you know. But unfortunately, my editor left at December. April comes. Random House decides to merge Bantam Dell and Ballantine, two different imprints, into one. When they merge two into one, that means there are people who become superfluous. So one of the heads of those two imprints had to go. Unfortunately, it was the one who was my champion, basically, leaving me with someone who didn't even know my work. And so now I'm with an editor who was not the best fit for me, and a publisher who had no interest in my work because they're the one, they didn't call, you know, naturally they did. They never chose me in the beginning. They didn't try to, they had no interest in building my career because it wasn't their choice from the beginning. And I get it. It's a business decision. The two books in my second deal, because I ended up getting a second deal with them, the two books in my second deal, instead of coming out in hardback like they were supposed to, got changed back to paperback. There was nowhere near the same amount of support that there had been for my other books or PR or any of that kind of stuff. They just kind of, it all kind of fizzled away. And, when it came time for me to present my next proposal, because they had the right of first refusal for my next work, I presented to them, hoping that they would say no. My agent was also of the same mind at the time. Plus, I think even if they said yes, we probably would have refused whatever offer. You know, just said, well, we're not interested in that offer, because that was our right to do at that point too. But they saved me that trouble. And I think the editor knew that, you know, he saw the writing on the wall that we were not getting along or anything like that. And they let me go, which was good and scary. This was in the fall of 2010. So what I had to do was I had to get a book in my mind. This is, at first I'm thinking, I got to get a book done so that we can send it out and try to get a new publisher right away, because that's still what you did. And you know, I'm starting to hear a little bit about the whole ebook stuff coming up and all that stuff. Joe Conrath was starting to do that stuff, and he's starting to talk about it more and more and more. And I'm getting a little bit interested in that, but I'm also thinking, okay, I need to do this. So I wrote a book. I wrote Little Girl Gone, and I gave it to my editor, or my agent. And in the meantime, I'm also starting to write what would become Sick, the first book of the Project Eden series. Because I'm thinking, what I want to do is I'm going to write another book, and I'm going to put that while we're trying to shop this one book, I'll put that and try that in the ebook area and see how that goes, just to test it out. So my editor or my agent reads Little Girl Gone, liked it a whole lot, but in her mind she thought that if we're going to go for a new publisher, we need to have something with a really big concept. And Little Girl Gone is you know, it's a detective guy helping you know, someone in distress kind of story. You know, it's a really gripping personal story that way, but it's not, you know, high concept or anything. But of course, the first book of the Project Eden series, Sick, is a huge high concept. It's about you know, people who want to get rid of a lot of the human race because they think there are too many people here, and they want to give kind of give humanity a restart. And so that was that series. So I said, okay, well, I'll let you look at Sick as soon as I'm done. And then what I'll do in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I'll put Little Girl Gone up and see how that does. But as I'm writing Sick, I keep thinking to myself, if I give this to my agent and she wants to sell it to somebody, it's going to take another year or two before it comes out. And it's just, you know, the whole momentum of it, I felt like there was a momentum to it and that I could not capitalize on, and that it would be, and that it was the perfect kind of book to go out as an ebook. I told her that when I finally finished it and gave it to her, and she said, well, just let me look at it. Maybe we'll just go out to a few very select people and everything. So she read it, and then she called me. She goes, this is really, really good. And she goes, I think you're right. You need to bring this out as an ebook sooner. You can't wait to go out and just find a publisher. I was very lucky, or have been very lucky, to have an agent who hasn't been a problem at all about me going independent. And so that's what I did. I ended up releasing Little Girl Gone in March of 2011. And I think it was May or June when I released Sick. And just, and I've never looked back. You know, the first 6 months, I was a little nervous, you know, getting into the whole independent market and the ebook market. But after that, you know, it's been, you know, it's, I haven't even, I don't think about doing anything else. I'm not nervous about, I mean, I'm always nervous about, are the books going to sell and all that stuff, but that's natural. You'd be nervous no matter where you're getting published. But it's, you know, it's been a fascinating ride, and I really enjoy it, and I love being my own boss, and I'm actually working harder than I ever did it before. So I think I made the right move anyway.
Oh, absolutely. It's funny you say that, because I actually just read today, somebody, they just recently sold a book to a publisher, and I mean, you know, good for them. They're really excited.
Yeah.
That's great. But they were like a little interview type thing, and they're like, well, you know, with the whole rise of self-publishing, why don't you do want to go self-publishing? And they're basically like, oh, for me, self-publishing seems too easy, and I feel that, you know, if it's too easy, it's probably not worth doing. And I'm thinking, like, self-publishing, when it's done right, is not easy at
not
all.
Easy. it's not easy.
And it just seemed like a very, I don't know, yeah, just an ignorant tough thing to say.
Yeah, it's tough. I will never criticize somebody who wants to get a traditional publishing contract, because I mean, there is definite advantages to it. I mean, there is always the possibility of getting your name known much better. And I can't deny that having had a traditional publishing past for me has helped me. I mean, it has helped me greatly because I brought a lot of those fans along. But I have gained a ton more now. You know, I mean, yeah, one maybe leads to the other and everything. But hopefully, if I could have still made it otherwise, I may not have been as quickly as I've been able to do it, but I think it would have still worked. But, you know, if somebody wants to go the traditional way, more power to them. You just have to be smart about it. And you have to know going in what it's just like anything. You know, ebooks, going independent doesn't mean you're going to be successful at all. You may not sell anything. you may sell 10 books a month for the rest of your life, and that's not what you want. But the thing is, you go traditional route, you may not sell anything either. That happens more times than not, too. I mean, you're going to sell, but it won't be that much, you know. You may never earn out whatever advance they get you. You may never see enough books in print that every bookstore can have even one copy. It happens. That's, you know, unless you're like the big name, and some people get that. Some people jump the line and get to the top, and, you know, if they're good, that's great, and I'm happy for them, but you can't count on that happening, you know. You got to do what you got to do and what feels right for you.
Definitely. Let's talk quick about your series. We already talked about Quinn. We talked about Project Eden, and you mentioned the Logan Harper series.
Right.
Do you plan on continuing that series?
I do. And I'm been remiss in not doing more. There are two books in the series right now. There's Little Girl Gone and Every Precious Thing. And I love that series and I love the characters on it. Unfortunately, I fell into a pattern over the last like 18 months of going Quinn, Project Eden, Quinn, Project Eden, Quinn, because those are the ones that have the biggest fan bases. So those are the ones that people keep asking me for. I do have people who do ask me for the Logan Harper, but I want to do another Logan Harper, whether anyone's asking for me or not, you know, because I think it's a great series.
Right.
And I think, you know, and from just a practical point, the more books you have in a particular series, the more chance that series will be read. And so I will be getting back to that. I'm actually hoping to get back to it this year. We'll see. It's been far too long, so I really, really need to jump on it.
And then the same thing with your YA book. I know
that's
one of those that I'm sure you want to continue, but at the same time.
I love to continue that. It's, Here Comes Mr. Trouble is the first book. It's the Trouble Family Chronicles. It's a fun, so much fun for me to write that. And that I really want to get back on that. The problem is because it's like young YA book. It's like middle school slash YA. So it's a tough audience to find for in the ebooks at this point right now. That, you know, that's the audience that still reads printed books for the most part. So the problem is I don't sell very much of those. And from a practical standpoint, taking the time to write the next one means taking time from writing something that people are actually going to read. Not that they won't read the Mr. Trouble books, but I just have to be smart about when I go back to it. And I'm hoping to, because I think it's a great series. And I say series, it's one book now, but it's going to be a great series because I will write the rest of the books in that series because I believe in it. I just need to have the time/freedom to write in it and not worry about how it's going to do yet. You know, I'm still trying to build everything. And once I feel comfortable where I can sacrifice other, you know, sacrifice sales to write something that I just truly love, then I will do that.
Yeah. Because you never, I mean, who knows, you know, you put out a second book, it might just take off. It's so hard to predict. It's impossible to predict.
And that audience will suddenly get to the point where they are reading electronically.
Yeah.
So, you know, it that's going to change too. So I know it's coming. I just was a little too far ahead of the curve on going that route with that one. Now other people have done well electronically with YA stuff. Again, mine's kind of younger YA, so it makes it a little bit more difficult, but it is what it is. And maybe it just hasn't found its audience yet, which is always possible. But I also, I mean, to be fair, I haven't done a lot in the past year or so to push it or anything because, you know, I've been concentrating on the adult thrillers, really.
Now, speaking of the adult thrillers, let's go back to Project Eden. I mean, I think all your self-published covers are great, but what Jeroen ten Berg does with the Project Eden covers are spectacular.
He does do a damn fine job with those covers.
I mean, every
he?
Time you come out with a new cover, it's like, holy shit. I'm like, it just gets better and better.
He's got it. Well, I think what helps with Jeroen is that he actually is a fan of that particular genre. he read what he doesn't always read every book that he does covers for. I mean, I don't know. I think he reads portions just to kind of get a feel, but he always reads my Project Eden books because I think he's really interested in what's going to happen next in the story. So he's invested even more in it. But he does good. He does great covers for everybody. I mean, Doug's Blake Crouch's covers. Who else? He does some stuff for Barry Eisler. I mean, he does a lot of really great covers. I'm just very happy to have him involved. He did the covers for the Logan Harper series, mm-hmm. and he also does the covers for, he did the Mr. Trouble cover too. So he's great. But the covers he's done for Project Eden have been fantastic.
Well, because I actually remember the first cover he did for Sick, which obviously was different, and I guess then you decided to rebrand them. And I mean, I really liked the first cover.
Yeah,
that you
good.
Had, but I mean, the rebranding was so much more,
so much better,
commercial and thriller-esque.
That was his suggestion, and what happened then was we had done Sick, had the cover, it was out for a while. Then I wrote Exit 9, which is the second book in the series, and he came up with this concept for the cover that was a lot tighter concept-wise and a lot. I don't know. Like you said, it's a really professional. I mean, not that the other one wasn't professional, but it was a whole different step up and level from the previous cover. And he said, I want to go back and redo the Sick cover so that and I go, by all means, go ahead, by all means. And he did, and he did not disappoint. And he hasn't, going forward, there hasn't been a bad one in the lot. I think the only bad one was one that nobody saw, and it was my fault. And that was when we first started doing the Dream Sky cover. I had kind of a concept of what I thought might be the way to go, because sometimes I do have a concept, and often they coincide with what he's thinking. But this time, I just the only thing that came to me, and he tried to do what I said, but it, and I was looking at it and I go, well, okay, this is okay. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to have to live with this. This isn't going to be the best one, but it was my concept. Right. And then he sent me an email like a day later. He says, would you mind if I tried an alternate cover for Dream Sky? No, if you have something in mind, go ahead. An hour or two later, he sent me the cover that is basically exactly like the cover we ended up using for Dream Sky, because he sent it to me and said, perfect. There might've been a little tweak in brightness. I don't even think we tweaked it at all, actually, after he sent it to me. I can't even remember, but it was just so good. It was like, wow. Yeah. I was an idiot before. So don't ever listen to me again.
So we got Dream Skies out right now, just recently came out. And then the next one is a Quinn book. When's that coming out?
That'll be The Discarded, and that should be coming out in March. I don't have an exact date yet. I'm trying as early in March as possible. Hopefully before mid-month. So, once I have a date, of course, I'll announce it. So I'm excited about that. I'm in the middle of working on that one right now, and it's a lot of fun, as always. It's always great getting back to those guys. So that's the next one. I'm not quite sure where I'm going after that. I do this year I still got to write another Project Eden book, got to do another Poe book, maybe another Quinn by before the end of the year, we'll see. But I've got some ideas of some like new things that I want to try. So I may try something new after this. We'll see.
Very cool. Choose Your Own Adventure ebook.
that would be interesting. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot of mental.
It would be. You definitely have to outline that. But definitely with ebooks, it makes it much, makes it much easier because you can click around and do all that stuff. So
it does. But man, I would need an assistant to plan that. Because that's not, my head doesn't work that way. So. Be fun though.
All right. Well, great. Is there anything else you want to mention or talk about?
I really enjoyed The Dishonored Dead.
Oh, wow. Well, thank
you. There you go. How about that?
That means a lot. Thank you.
Well, yeah, you're
welcome. It's a fun book, actually. It was fun. Someone mentioned, I don't know. Like, it's a zombie book that's not a zombie book.
Right.
In fact, someone even said that it's more like a political thriller just with zombies in place of terrorists.
Right.
And I'm I can see that.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, about that book, you had mentioned earlier about, you know, about things just happening and being a surprise. Originally, when I wrote that, it was supposed to just be a novella. And what happened was, because, there was originally a short story and someone was like, oh, I want to see more of this. So I'm like, all right, a little novella. And what happened was, in the beginning of the book, they're like walking through a hallway and there's like this janitor who's just like there. They pass this janitor. And, you know, as I'm writing, I'm like, okay, they pass this janitor, whatever. And I didn't really think about it. And then, you know, then like later in the book, this janitor turns out not to be a janitor and plays a huge role and just sent the book in a completely different direction. And it was just one of those really great moments as a writer where you just like, you basically let the story take over. And I think
I love doing that. That's too much fun. I love that.
I mean, and that's one of those things where I just don't like to outline because I feel like, you know, if I do outline, I'm going to stick so close to the outline. And
I mean, not to prolong the conversation or anything, but, you know, you have to, the thing about outline, the good thing is that if you're good at it, it will keep you on a schedule and you can keep and will keep you going. Whereas sometimes if you're working off outline, you can be meandering for weeks in useless directions. So I think the more experienced you are as a writer, just from sheer writing, the easier it becomes to work off outline because you have a sense of if you're going in a bad direction or not a lot sooner than you would if you don't have that experience. And you can rein it in, or you have a sense, you have a trust in your abilities because you know, or a trust or a knowledge of your abilities that you know you can't do this particular thing because you're not, that's going to take you in areas that you're not sure you're going to be able to get out of. So I think, you know, there's got to be a balance there. I mean, if you really want to have a set amount of time that you work on to get the book done, you know, you have to know what is the best way for you to achieve that goal, you know. For what it's worth.
Absolutely. I think that's a really great point to end on. And so it's been a great pleasure to talk with you. And I'm sure 2014 is going to be very, very good for you with just all these new books coming out and just things really picking up. And folks, I have links here, obviously, to Dream Sky. And I can't link to every single one of Brett's posts because I'm going to be here then for an hour.
Right.
But I'll definitely link to his Amazon page. So definitely check out every single one of his books, especially his YA book. So it's going to force him then to get back in and start.
Yes, I would love that. I would love that. That would be awesome.
So, all right, folks. So next time we will see you later. Bye.
All right. Thank you.